We're always taking callers for him to hang up on. This is the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
All right, we are back. Game 7 of the World Series goes tonight at Kauffman Stadium in Kansas City. It'll be Tim Hudson against Jeremy Guthrie of the Kansas City Royals. Mike Wilner's Blue Jay A Day pregame show will be on at 7 o'clock with a TBA guest to take your calls. We're going to make it a surprise. And Sportsnet Ontario's coverage of the World Series starts at 7:30 on Sportsnet Ontario. Of course, there'll be Scotiabank Wednesday night hockey as well. The Detroit Red Wings at the Washington Capitals. That is 7:30. A Hockey Central pregame at 7 o'clock, and then in Sportsnet 1 at 10 p.m., Scotiabank Wednesday night hockey. This should be a good one. The Nashville Predators against the suddenly hot, the suddenly can't lose. The suddenly, who the hell was calling for Dallas Eakins' head? The Nashville Predators against the Edmonton Oilers. So a couple of hockey games on tap, and Game 7, the deciding game of the World Series. Covered a couple of Game 7s in my time. Covered the Diamondbacks beating the New York Yankees, which was probably the most shocking Game 7 that I can remember, just because it was the Yankees and it wasn't supposed to happen. And Mariano Rivera was on the mound. And Mariano Rivera gave up a flare. And Arizona won the World Series. And it was like the weirdest, honestly, it was the weirdest feeling I've ever had watching a game. It was bizarre. I mean, there was, just before Luis Gonzalez's hit, there was this cold wind that kind of blew through the ballpark in Arizona. The roof was open, and it was just weird. There was dust blowing around all over the place, and then this little poke into left field and into shallow left field, and that was it. The game was over. There was another Game 7 in 1997, the Florida Marlins and the Cleveland Indians. Florida won Game 7 in a rather dramatic fashion, and, well, this is how dramatic it was.
...that could win the World Series as he leads away from third. The 0-1 pitch. A liner off Nagy's glove into center field. The Florida Marlins have won the World Series. The men in teal are for real.
That was Edgar Renteria's game-winning hit, scoring Craig Counsell. Cliff Floyd, the MLB Network, was on the 1997 Florida Marlins, and Cliff Floyd joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. Cliff, thanks so much for doing this, man.
JB, what's up, man?
So, tell me what went through your mind when you saw Edgar get that hit.
You know what? I sort of went through that whole process the other day. And I think it was on cue when I was talking about 97, how crazy it was.
Mm-hmm.
He got the hit on TV, so you know they break down the the best of the World Series always on MLB Network, so mm-hmm. It's all the World Series popping up. And I just remember him hitting it, and us it was a overhang in the dugout that if you jump high enough, you crack your forehead on it, right?
Right.
And I just remember missing that thing barely, because you literally jumped like you was a basketball player, as a baseball player. Like mm-hmm. I mean, that's how everybody went so crazy that you just remember him hitting it, and everything throughout the whole season went into the emotions as you ran on the field. The whole season, Darren Dalton at some point during the season when we thought we weren't going to make it, Alex Fernandez blowing out his arm and not being able to pitch, in the World Series. So many things went through those emotions when he hit that ball that, a quick story, after that, after we won, celebrating everything, Jim Leland called us all into the training room.
Mm-hmm.
And so we got going, I'm thinking, golly, I'm going to have to speak, and somebody's going to have to say something. Everybody had been drinking champagne. I'm just looking forward to this. So it was one of those moments.
Mm-hmm.
And when everybody got into the training room, JB, nobody said a word. That's how mentally exhausted, physically exhausted everybody was. It was just silence for about 10 minutes to get away from it, and sort of take everything in. And that's when you realize, like, this is real. I mean, this is what it's all about.
Cliff Floyd joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. Now, in that game, you made an appearance as a pinch hitter, correct? But you were walk us through that. You made an appearance as a pinch hitter, and then because the pitcher was changed around, you actually didn't get to bat, right?
Right. That's what Game 7 is all about. I mean, it's the strategy part. Now, it's not so much strategy in the National League fields as the American League fields.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, you know, for our audience, that's the difference. Because when you go to, when you enter that Game 7 was in San Francisco, then you're talking about double switches, you're talking about lineup changes, you're talking about pinch hitters coming in, guys going to, but when you have the DH element, you don't have all that.
Mm-hmm.
So if we was in, you know, of course we was in Florida, so Hargrove comes out and makes a switch, brings a lefty in, and then Leland counters with a righty here. So it was just the strategy part. And, you know, but what we was basically trying to do was burn a pitcher, which we didn't burn, you know, a pinch hitter. Burn a pitcher. So that was the strategy used. And it worked in favor of that inning, but we ended up winning the ball game. So it was great.
Was that game, Cliff, as it was played out, were you and your teammates, your Marlins teammates, would you say that's the most focused you've been in a game? You know, it's funny because I've talked to guys who played in Game 7 in hockey, and there are some guys who'll tell you they can remember everything. They can remember getting up in the morning, you know, the whole day, detail by detail. Other guys will tell you, honestly, until it got to the ballpark, it was a blur, and then you just kind of went out. Or until you got to the arena, it was a blur. Then you just kind of went out and warmed up, and then you went out and played, and the next thing we knew, we were winning the cup. So,
yeah.
Do you remember the details?
You know what? I do. I remember waking up kind of funny because it happened twice. It happened in the playoffs when I was with the Mets.
Mm-hmm.
We end up losing NLCS to go to the playoffs to the Cardinals. But that day, I woke up, JV, and I woke up as a winner in my sleep, so I dreamt we won.
Mm-hmm.
And when I woke up, I was like, "That was a bad. That you know, whoever put that in, that was horrible. You know, you're not supposed to do that."
Mm-hmm.
I mean, because I woke up thinking we were world champions, and you know, everybody goes, "Well, you know, did you wear the emotions? You know, did you wear the emotions of that whole day because you wasn't really a starter?" And that was a great question. You know, people ask you certain. I go, "You don't understand. You have more anxiety as a non-starter, I think, than you do as a starter."
Right.
But you remember more because you take in everything because you hope that for this moment again as a starter.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So I took in everything. I remember getting up. Well, I remember going to IHOP. I remember going to eat breakfast there. You know, my dad was in town. He was having conversations about what you think, how the scenario going to play out. Remember all that, getting to the ballpark the same way. And because I was, in my mind, I was still a starter. I just, at that particular time, I mean, I just won. Our team was so stacked. I was just waiting, you know, waiting for my opportunity to come in and play.
Mm-hmm.
And my mindset was whatever superstition I had at the time, I definitely followed it. It was the same routine, get to the ballpark, you know, go through my whole pregame stuff and then sort of take in what these guys were doing. So I remember everything. I remember guys still doing their same thing. And that was the eerie thing to me. And then the last thing I'll tell you about that day is I overheard Al Leiter.
Mm-hmm.
Al Leiter was Game 7 starter. And I remember him having a conversation with Charles Johnson.
Right.
He said, "I'm going to throw a first pitch curveball." And he said this. He said, "If I throw a first pitch curveball of the game for a strike," you can go back and check it out, JB. "If I throw a first pitch curveball for a strike, we're gonna win this game." And sure enough, that dude threw a first pitch curveball. Now you know Al Leiter back in the day, a curveball was definitely secondary to his fastball and his cutter.
Yeah.
And he threw it for a strike.
Interesting.
And I thought to myself, "Well, heck, we're gonna win this thing, man."
Interesting.
You know, and that's just so many. It's so many things that go into, you know, the whole day. But you have to make it a game. You still have to make it that game and focus on that. Or boy, you drive yourself crazy.
Cliff Floyd joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. All right, Game 7 tonight, the Giants and the Royals. I mean, I don't know how you call this game. You've had, you know, wipeouts. You've had close games. You've had blowing leads. You've had early leads that have held up. Yeah, I think you've honestly seen just about everything in this World Series. But, Cliff, what do you think is going to be the most important thing tonight? What do we have to look for tonight?
I really believe, as much as, you know, my head's spinning. I mean, I can go directly to situational hitting, which we saw last night early with the Royals, right?
Mm-hmm.
Guys in scoring position, you have to score. You have, you know, how is it going to play out, Jimmy? Is it going to be where, you know, you get guys in scoring position and you immediately have to bring the infield in? I mean, like, those are things that I'm looking at tonight. The runs in scoring position and then, of course, the bullpen.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we've seen them. I mean, we saw last night, in the second inning for the Giants?
Yeah.
You know, Petit came in a crucial situation and couldn't hold down the fort. But that was a tough pill to swallow for him. I just look at the bullpen. The Royals are rested. You know, when you look at the Giants, they just get it done. They, you know, Jimmy, I felt, said it best the other day. We don't have particularly the roles. We know Casillas is, and Romo usually come in around this, you know, seventh, eighth. But I could come in the fourth. Javi Lopez can come in, and you know, he was up yesterday in the second. So they don't really necessarily have roles. They understand that. I think the bullpen is going to play a pivotal part in who wins this ballgame, because you're going to have to stop the bleeding somewhere. I don't know if Huddy or Guthrie are going to be able to go. You know, I think the leash is going to be, you know, very short.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, if they get in trouble like PV did last night, either or, the bullpen is going to come in, and that's just how it's going to be.
How much do you think Madison Bumgarner can throw today? What do you think would be the max?
See, this is, you know what, right to your point, I would say an inning.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, and for me, he pitched a complete game the other day. Great, right? And mm-hmm. I'm wondering myself, but if you know you're going to use him in game 7, possibly. Not if you know, so if you're possibly going to use him in game 7, then why does he throw 117 pitches?
Mm-hmm.
That's just my point. I mean, you have guys that can get you through. I know you have to win the game. You have to solidify the game in the win column in the World Series. There's no pinch hitting, taking guys out unless last night you see the blowout of 10-0. I understand it was just 5-0, then get back in the ballgame. I get that. But if you know you might have to use Madison Bumgarner, then listen, Bochy is going to get them. I'm just saying, if you know you have to use them, man, I've at least thought about getting them out of there just for the surprise that I'm going to use tonight.
Right. Cliff, it was good of you to join us today. Always a pleasure to talk to you.
No doubt, JB. I'll be up there soon, man, so I definitely got to come in and I love that little sit-down we had a couple months ago.
We look forward to having you here.
All right, buddy.
Take care. That is Cliff Floyd, the MLB Network. And Game 7 goes tonight. By the way, you can follow Cliff Floyd at Cliff Floyd 30. And he lives up here in the off season, or spends a lot of time up here in the off season. So, you know, we'll definitely get him in. Definitely get him in studio. Always get a lot of good response anytime we have Cliff Floyd on. So there you go. Game 7 tonight. 7:30 on Sportsnet Ontario. Wilner will have his Blue Jay Day pregame show with a TBA, a special guest at 7 p.m. And then we go at it. Tim Hudson, Jeremy Guthrie, all hands on deck. I think Cliff Floyd's right. I call Giants in 6 in this series, and I would feel a lot better if Yusmiro Petit hadn't been part of that implosion last night. I think you heard our conversation with Jeff Passan from Kansas City yesterday. That's kind of the guy that I think has emerged as the most important pitcher, frankly, the most important pitcher in either team. And I would feel a lot better if he hadn't been part of that implosion. I just don't know. I don't know what the Giants do right now. I think they absolutely need 5 innings out of Tim Hudson tonight somehow in order to see this thing through. Because the Kansas City Royals bullpen, it's all lined up right now. They're lined up. They're ready to go. And if the Giants can get 5 out of Hudson and be closer leading, I think they got a shot. Late in the game, a close game, I'll still take the Giants. I'll still take Bruce Bochy. Barry Davis is covering the World Series for Sportsnet. You can, of course, follow him on Twitter. His Twitter handle is at SN Barry Davis. And Barry Davis joins us from Kansas City. Mr. Davis, have you had enough barbecue?
No, I have not.
You can never have enough barbecue, can you?
Never have enough barbecue. In fact, there's one flight a day that leaves Kansas City for Toronto, and it's 4:20 in the afternoon, so I will be sure that before heading to the airport tomorrow, I will make one last stop at probably Oklahoma Joe's, get me a Z-Man sandwich with the crew, and then head to the airport. Got to have barbecue.
Z-Man sandwich, is that the burnt ends?
No, that is the brisket on a bun. If you saw the feature we did, it's the one that I ate on TV, and it's a brisket on a bun with the provolone, the onion ring on the Kaiser. It's pretty tremendous.
There you go. I was thinking of burnt ends. I always associate Kansas City barbecue and burnt ends. What's going to happen tonight, Barry? What's going to happen tonight?
We will see Madison Bumgarner at some point in this game. I can tell you that for sure.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's so strange, Jeff, because you look at the series and say 3-3. It's been a really close series. But only one game has been a close game. The rest have been blowouts.
Yeah.
You know, it's crazy. I mean, a 10-0 game last night and, you know, a 5-0 game in game four. It's been all over the place. So I think you're right. I think, this is about Tim Hudson and this is about Jeremy Guthrie. And whoever can get off to a good start and whatever team gets the lead, because there's so many arms available in both bullpens tonight and obviously the big three in Kansas City, I'd say James Shields is probably available for an inning if they have to. I mean, all hands on deck for both teams. So, hey, this is what we're looking forward to. And even Bruce Bochy admitted last night, as much as they would have loved to have wrapped it up in Game 6, I mean, how can you argue about the chance of playing in a Game 7?
I think it was Aaron Boone making the point yesterday that one of the things we've seen in this series, and you just referred with the fact that there have been so many blowouts, it's... You know, we associate managing in the World Series, Barry, as, you know, being a series of tough decisions with the game on the line. And Aaron Boone's point, and I think it's well made, said this may be more than any other World Series we've seen in a long time. This may get back to what decisions did a manager make in the middle of a blowout, whether he was being blown out or whether his team was the one that was doing the blowing out. It's been a different World Series to manage for Bruce Bochy and Ned Yost.
Yeah, and it's about, you know, conserving what you have and making sure guys are available and resting players. And, you know, even last night when the game did get out of hand and they went to Vogelsong, and I was wondering, well, why would you use Vogelsong tonight? Because maybe you want to have him available for tomorrow. It's 10-0. Why use him? But, you know, Bochy didn't count him as one of the arms not available. Mm-hmm. So I guess Vogelsong is available. So, using certain pinch hitters and, you know, a couple of the double switches that Ned Yost made, you know, in San Francisco that were a little bit questionable. But, yeah, it is very different when you're managing in a blowout game on either end of it, whether you're, you know, deciding whether or not you want to have your starter stay an extra inning despite the blowout in your favor, or if you're the manager on the other guy saying, well, I don't want to use Herrera or Davis tonight because it is a blowout. So, yeah, it's very interesting the way this is all played out.
What when I covered Game 7 between the Diamondbacks and the Yankees, and the Diamondbacks won, I remember writing that the Diamondbacks, I called them a McChampion because they were going to be a one-off champion, easily disposable. They were like a fast food champion. There was very little about the Diamondbacks that suggested they were going to be back and win another World Series. The Giants, we know. We know the Giants have that track record. It's pretty hard to argue against that. But, Barry, if Kansas City were to win this, if they were to win this World Series, I'll put to you that even if they win this World Series, they won't start next season as the favorite in that division, depending on how serious Miguel Cabrera's injury is. But if Miguel Cabrera's due back the first month of the season or something like that, I'll put to you that Detroit will be the favorite over Kansas City.
Yeah, I no doubt about it. And, you know, Jeff, we always talk about how teams look so good on paper. The Kansas City Royals don't look good on paper. They look good on the field. And they're a definite sum of the parts as opposed to looking at individual pieces. You know, I talked to George Brett this past week, and, you know, he mentioned the Toronto Blue Jays. He went, you know, player for player. You compare the talent between the Blue Jays and the Royals, you'd say the Blue Jays have more talent. But yet the Royals have a way of playing together which is allowing them to go this far. He said the same thing applied in 1985. He said, when we beat the Blue Jays in the ALCS, he said, I looked over at that dugout and said, how are we doing this? This team is so much better than we are, but yet we play better. So the Kansas City Royals are a team that when you look at them, and even in the offseason, you see that World Series that they have won, you look at the talent, and then you compare the talent to around the league, there's no way the Royals will be able to do it again, but you just never know. They go against the grain of what it's supposed to take to be a winning team. You know, they don't hit home runs. If you look at all the hits they had last night, the majority of them were singles. You know, they don't have a lot of star-studded talent out there, but they just have a way of playing together. And whether that works again next year, it's hard to say. But when the so-called prognosticators make the predictions, oh, yeah, a lot of people will overlook the Kansas City Royals again.
What's Kansas City like right now?
Fantastic. I mean, everywhere you go, I mean, you know, if you've ever been to Kansas City, that it's the city of fountains, and there's, you know, everywhere you look, there's a fountain, and every fountain in this city has blue water streaming out of it.
Mm-hmm.
You can't walk a block without seeing people, you know, decked out in Kansas City Royals colors. Because the ballpark is in the middle of nowhere, and it's surrounded by nothing but parking lots, there are so many people out there tailgating and partying. And before the game tonight, Hugh Burrell is going to do a piece outside with all the fans and just to give people a taste of what it's like. And they have a fairly new area downtown called the Power and Light District.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of like Maple Leaf Square, where they have the game on a big screen and people are out there partying. And, you know, we talk about how it's been since 1985, since the Royals have been here. And it's one thing to talk about it. It's another thing to be living it. And I'm sure that if the Blue Jays ever get back, knowing it's been since 92, exactly what it's going to be like in the city of Toronto if the Jays ever do get back there. And that's exactly what it's like here in Kansas City right now.
You know, it's funny. I had someone tell me one time that when you win a championship in a city that hasn't won a championship for a long time, it's almost as if the citizens of that city take a step back and think about just how far their city has come since the last World Series. Whether it's, you know, you talk about a new development or a new entertainment district. It really, for a city, becomes kind of a point of civic, almost civic introspection. You look, wow, look at what Kansas City's like now compared to what it was like in the mid 80s, the last time we won. Is there a real sense there that, Barry, of that civic identity in that city? Because Kansas City, you know, we've gone there a lot. I've gone there a lot to cover baseball. It's one of my favorite places. It's like Pittsburgh's one of my favorite places. And every time I tell people that, they roll their eyes. And I'm just wondering if you get the same sense with Kansas City.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, you turn on the local news and all you do is, you know, you hear about what was happening back in 1985.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they'll show movie clips of Back to the Future, and, you know, this is what was going on in 85, and here's what the city looked like. And, oh, yeah, Kauffman Stadium had artificial turf back in 1985.
That's right.
And, this is what the uniforms look like in 85. And, you know, even at the ballpark, they have the Royals Hall of Fame in there, and you walk through there, and they have a big TV screen. What do you see? And if you're a Blue Jays fan, it hurts, but you see Jim Sundberg's video of hitting that win-aided triple at Exhibition mm-hmm. Stadium. So 85 is a year that just really sticks out here, and the closer the Royals get to winning the World Series, the more and more they start to show a lot of what it was like back then and how much things have changed since then.
Barry Davis joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. Who has been for you, Barry, the most surprising or the most memorable player so far in this World Series, whether it's somebody you've interviewed or somebody you've run into or somebody you've heard being interviewed or somebody you've seen play? Is there a face to you for this particular World Series?
I think early on, and it was definitely Lorenzo Cain, simply because I didn't know a heck of a lot about the guy just from seeing him once in a while when the Jays would play him, and learning his story and knowing that this guy didn't even play baseball, didn't even own a glove until, you know, his sophomore year of high school. And, you know, that he was a basketball player who got cut from his team, and that's what made him decide to play baseball, and what he's been able to do. And he was the MVP of the ALCS. And, you know, this is a guy that really has stuck out. And I think the other thing that really kind of opened my eyes to is Ned Yost, a guy that I think was labeled by many people as a dunce, a guy who could not make the right decisions every time he did something. That, and kind of, you know what, it reminds me so much of the way the fan base treats John Gibbons. Mm-hmm. It really is similar. And now all of a sudden Ned Yost is looked at as a hero, as a genius, you know, pushing all the right buttons, getting, you know, the motivation from the players that needs to happen. Definitely. And one other guy, and again, because I've been following the Royals since the ALCS, I've had a closer eye on them. But I just think a guy like Hosmer is a guy that didn't realize just how talented this guy was, what a smart hitter he is, going deep into counts. Even last night, the guy calls timeout, and the pitch is thrown, and he hits it anyways, and it goes up the middle for what would have been a single.
Right.
Don't ever see that happen. And then the very next pitch, he actually does get a two-run single. So just a real pro hitter. And, you know, you see a lot of things on this Kansas City team, and to bring back that Blue Jays comparison, that, you know, you're wondering, what is it the Jays are missing? What do they need? You know, what would push them over the cliff? And do they need to go out and sign, you know, an all-star free agent? And I look at what the Royals have put together, and you say, no, that's what the Blue Jays need. It's not about putting together a fantasy league team. It's about putting together the parts that work together and can win together. And I think the Jays should look closely at what the Kansas City Royals have put together to kind of say, you know, this might be a better model to follow.
Barry, it was good of you to do this. I've enjoyed your work of the postseason. Have fun tonight. Beware of Jason Fraser and Eric Kratz and champagne bottles. Have some barbecue. We'll see you when you get back.
Yeah, I've got the goggles ready, and Fraser looked at me last night after the game. He said, I'm coming after you when we win, so be ready. So I'm ready.
Get the plastic sheets.
Yes.
Take care. That's Barry Davis of Sportsnet. Barry and Hugh Burrell doing tremendous work covering the World Series for us on Sportsnet in Kansas City and San Francisco. Game 7 tonight. Get to see, if Kansas City wins, get to see Barry Davis drowned in champagne by Jason Fraser and Eric Kratz. Game 7 starts at 7:30. It'll be Tim Hudson on the mound against Jeremy Guthrie. Winner take all hands on deck for this one. And we're treating it the same way, 7 o'clock on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Mike Wilner will have a special pregame show, his Blue Jay A Day pregame show. Mike Wilner's guest so far is Mr. TBA, but I'm sure Wilner will come up because Wilner's magic. He'll pull somebody up to come on the air with him, and whoever it is will take your calls. So again, Game 7 of the World Series tonight on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and in Sportsnet Ontario. Hockey, 7 p.m. on Sportsnet 360, Hockey Central's pregame show. It is Scotiabank Wednesday Night Hockey, 7:30 p.m. on 360. The Wings and the Washington Capitals, 10 p.m. on Sportsnet 1, the Nashville Predators against the suddenly hot Edmonton Oilers. The Raptors also start their season tonight against the Atlanta Hawks at the Air Canada Center. Matt Devlin is the Raptors TV play-by-play voice on Sportsnet, and Matt Devlin will join us when the Jeff Blair Show continues on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Trending now on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. 8 games played and still no wins for the Carolina Hurricanes. The Leafs slay the Sabres at the ACC. And the Royals spoil San Fran's party plans. Who'll be popping the champagne tonight in KC? It's all trending now on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
I'm Lewis, and I'm an avioner. Where I'm going is San Miguel, Portugal.
São Miguel.
With my grandmother, Maria.
Hola.
With my old card, I couldn't book a direct flight. But with Avion, I can redeem my points on over 130 airlines, even during peak season. So we'll see the hydrangeas in bloom, just like when Avô was a little girl.
A coisa mais linda que já viste.
I don't know what that means, but I'm about to find out.
Avioners have the freedom to travel when they want. Apply for the RBC Avion card today and get 15,000 welcome points. Visit rbc.com/avion for details. Some conditions apply.
Within these walls, history was made. Legends were born. Championships were won. Now, history is being made all over again as the Ryerson Rams hit the ice at Ryerson's Mattamy Athletic Center, formerly Maple Leaf Gardens. It's Toronto's hottest hockey. Epic, up close, and only $12.
Catch the Rams as they take on Western University November 1st. Tickets at Ticketmaster.ca.
I wasn't closing my lakefront cottage this past weekend because I don't have one. I spent this past weekend meeting with clients who've had their long-term disability claim denied. My name is Aaron Waxman, and if your claim has been denied, you need a lawyer that can meet with you on the weekend, and I'm that lawyer. So call me at 416-661-4878, and don't worry about upfront legal fees, because there are none. At my law firm, we only get paid when you get paid. And before you call, you should always remember that there are no bad questions. 416-661-4878 or awaxman at awaxmanlaw.ca.
It's the Ford Swap Your Ride bonus week. Until October 31st, Canadians are getting an additional $500 on top of already great deals. And how do they feel about that?
It's amazing. That's what I'm talking about.
All those features and $500 sold.
Now's the time to get into a new 2014 vehicle like the Focus, Escape, and Edge with financing as low as 0% and a no extra charge winter safety package. Or get the F-150 with up to $9,000 in rebates. Get your additional $500 bonus only until October 31st and only at your Ford store. See Ford.ca for details.
I'm Harvey Brooker, the weight loss expert for men. Our five-week $199 test drive has helped hundreds of men. The amazing response has men of all ages losing weight in an all-male group and seeing results. For 29 years, we've helped thousands of men just like you. It's time for you to book your five-week test drive for only $199. Call 416-222-9887. That's 222-9887 or visit harveybrooker.com. Harvey Brooker Weight Loss for Men. If you could do it alone, you would have done it already.
Enter today's Jeff Blair Show bonus code in the fan club at sportsnet590.ca for 590 points.
Now Jeff Blair can tell you bedtime stories. Subscribe to podcasts of the Jeff Blair Show at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher and listen anytime you want. Sweet dreams. Sportsnet 590, the fan on demand. Now more of the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
And that may be the last time we ever play that song. You think? Always makes me want to check my headphones in case there's something wrong with them. The Toronto Raptors and the Atlanta Hawks will get the Raptors' NBA season underway tonight. The regular season started yesterday, last night, I should say, on three fronts. A lot of expectations around the Raptors going into this game, going into the regular season. A lot of hype around the Raptors going into this game, going into the regular season. Understandable, I think. This is a city that is thirsty for a winner. And the Raptors kind of encompass, in some ways, they're almost the perfect Toronto sports team to win because they've got overachievers, they've got some players with a little bit of star caliber, they've got the blue-collar thing that people in this city always seem to latch on to, and they've got some personalities, whether it's the general manager, the head coach, DeMar DeRozan, Kyle Lowry. There's a lot to like about this team on and off the court. It starts for real tonight. Matt Devlin is the play-by-play voice of the Raptors on Sportsnet, and he joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. Happy New Year, Mr. Devlin. I always say that at the start of the season. Happy New Year.
How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing well.
I'm excited.
You ready for this?
I am. I think that, you know, you talk about the expectations. I think they're ready for the expectations, and I think that that's always the big thing. Are you prepared for them? And I think the Raptors are, and I think they understand, you know, where they are right now. They understand what the Atlantic Division is like, and as well as the landscape in the East. That doesn't mean that you're not going to stumble along the way. But this is a team that, and I mentioned to you this earlier in preseason as well as training camp, there's a calm confidence about them.
50 wins for this team?
I think that that is definitely realistic. I think above and beyond that, I think, you know, my feeling is that they'll win the Atlantic Division. I think that that's important because of the fact that you're going to end up then as a top four and you get home court, which is extremely important. In order to get to 50, they're going to have to handle late-game situations better. You know, mm-hmm. They've only won three games in overtime over the course of the last 2 years, In games decided by 3 points or less, they're 3-8. And, of course, game seven, they lost 104-103. So if they're able to do that, and I think that there's internal growth in that area, you know, from a DeMar as well as Kyle Lowry, who, you know, obviously had the ball in his hands at the end of game seven, you not only are going to have that, but then you also have the addition of Lou Williams, who is coming over from Atlanta and has taken big shots. He's coming off of a year where he averaged just over 10, which was his lowest number in seven seasons, Jeff. But he also is just 20 months removed from a torn ACL. So I think everybody thinks that he's going to be able to provide, you know, some of that as well.
Matt Devlin joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. As I look around this conference, I mean, I think most people, Matt, would say that Cleveland is the favorite. I really like Chicago if Derrick Rose stays healthy. I think they might be the best team in the conference if he's healthy, and I know that's a huge if. That's an if in capital letters. But realistically, let's I'm with you. I think the Raptors win the Atlantic Division. Of the teams above them in the East, how close are they to a team like, and I know it's early and it's hard to tell, but how close are they, do you think, to a team like the Cavaliers or even a team like the Bulls?
Well, I think that we'll find out when the Raptors play those teams. You know, obviously with the Bulls, you know that from a defensive standpoint, Tom Thibodeau is going to have them, you know, geared up on a night-in and night-out basis. But two things changed there, in my opinion. One is that you've brought in Pau Gasol toward the end of his career, and he's never been a great defensive player. And then also you have Derrick Rose off of two knee surgeries, and so that changes. He, as we all know, really likes to ride his top five guys. You know, that's going to have to change. So how does he adjust to that? And then in Cleveland, does it take time for the three of those players to figure things out? And I heard somebody say, and it was actually really, I thought, on point, you know, LeBron James likes to have the ball in his hands, and in Miami they were able to do that and play off of him with Dwayne and Bosch. And, you know, Kyrie Irving likes to have the ball in his hands as well. And so, you know, how does that kind of play itself out? You know, the Raptors have an opportunity with nine of their first 13 at home to really take advantage of the early season schedule, because I think everybody kind of knows who they are and what they're supposed to do on this team. Roles are pretty well defined. Yes, you've added James Johnson. Yes, you've added Lou Williams. But I think that there might be some minutes, you know, not there on certain nights for certain people. But, you know, at the end of the day, I think everybody knows, you know, who they are. But to say, are they ready to compete for that top spot? I don't know if they're there yet. Are they ready to take that next step? Absolutely.
The Raptors have nine of their first 12 games at home. Given the way this city responded to the Raptors in the playoffs and given the noise at the ACC during the playoffs, I would think if you're sitting down and you're designing a schedule to favor the Raptors, having those games at home right out of the gate has got to be a huge plus for this team. Plus the other thing too, Matt, I'm looking at this. They've got Orlando on Saturday. They got Miami. There's a lot of practice time in here at home for Dwayne Casey, isn't there?
There is, and then you have OKC, and then you travel to Boston.
Right.
I will say this too, that their opponent tonight, it's one of those opponents that, you know, people look at and go, oh, Atlanta. It's interesting that the Raptors and Atlanta are the only two teams in the Eastern Conference that returned their starting five.
Mm-hmm.
And they are a team that made it to the postseason last year, a team that, you know, went to a game seven in the playoffs last year. They're going to take a ton of threes, which will either keep them around, you know, or maybe it doesn't. You have Al Horford is back, and you know that their compete level is certainly going to be high. But this is an opportunity for certain for this team when you look at the schedule, because, as you well know, come Christmas time, with the World Juniors in town, they will go out on the road for a significant period of time. And with that, you know, they're going to have to handle themselves. Now, you know, they're coming off of a year where, for the first time ever, they won, you know, more games on the road than lost, and mm-hmm. they had never done that before. And I'd also say, too, and I think why everybody says, yeah, 50 is realistic, is because last year you start 6-12.
Right.
And then after that, you know, you end up, you know, winning 42 games. So it's you know, look, it's how do you handle the expectations? How do you handle, you and I both know, we've been around teams long enough that there'll be a time when you lose, you know, a couple of games right off the bat. In fact, I was talking to Masai Ujiri. He said, you know, it was interesting. The year that his team in Denver won a franchise record 57 games, they actually started 0-3. And it was after that 0-3 start that everybody kind of banded together and, you know, really, you know, got to that next level.
What do you think coming out of, because you've seen obviously more of these preseason games than any of us. What do you think are the things that the Raptors will go into the regular season really looking to improve on?
Well, you know, I'm not a big believer in preseason. In fact, I kind of agree with Tony Parker that, you know, at this stage of the game, you know, they should probably cut it down to 4 preseason games. And use those extra 2 weeks to take the 82 games and kind of spread it out. So maybe there's not as many 4 games in 5 nights or back-to-backs. Will they ever get down to 4? Maybe not. Maybe they'll get to 6. Because I think you really get to a point where ultimately, if you're Dwayne Casey, you just want your team to be healthy. And so when I look at this team, you know, the one thing that did rear its head were some of the turnovers. Now, some of that style of play, you know, you're pushing the pace, you know, offensively off of turnovers. But, you know, the question will be, you know, will they have the ability to turn up their defense now that the regular season is upon us? And I think that they will. I think going into the season, Jeff, the big question is that, you know, Dwayne Casey wants out of Jonas Valanciunas is that, you know, can you be a rim protector? We need a rim protector defensively. And I think, you know, for him, when you start the postseason with 3 consecutive double-doubles, people are looking at him to kind of take that next step. And on this team, which is a guard-oriented team, you know, for him, I think a double-double is realistic, but I think the majority of that is going to have to come off of him getting to the glass. So you need a rim protector. And then the other thing, if you talk about preseason as it relates to the regular season rebounding, this is a team that's got to rebound. And it may not be just on Amir, it may not be just on Jonas, but it may have to come from multiple positions.
We're going to be joined by James Johnson in the next hour. What is his role going to be with this team? Because it seems to me that from everything you read about James, from everything you hear, I think he's kind of figured out now what he has to do to contribute to a real good team. And that's different. I mean, anybody can contribute to a team that isn't winning games.
That's right.
But to contribute to a really good team, I think James has finally figured out what his comfort zone is, hasn't he?
Yeah, I think so. You know what, when he was here, I was a fan of his game from a defensive standpoint. And, you know, I think he understands, you know, what he has to do defensively. I think when you look at, you know, last Friday night in Montreal, he went up against Carmelo Anthony. And, you know, James Johnson, when he got on Carmelo, he did an excellent job because Carmelo went off early on. But he came in off of the bench and just did a superb job. He is big. He is strong. He is physical. He plays with an edge. And from a defensive standpoint, he can guard multiple positions, and I think that's huge. And this, you know, when you go back to the playoffs and you were here and you saw what Joe Johnson did and you saw Jason Kidd just say, all right, run the same play again for Joe Johnson, you know, they're not going to stop him. Now you have a response for that. Now you have your counter. You have James Johnson, a big physical player that is athletic as can be, that you can now look at, say, all right, go out there and make it tough, you know, on a Joe Johnson. Make it tough on Carmelo. Make it as tough as you can against a LeBron. Because as we all know that's, you know, extremely difficult to, you know, to limit him. But those are the sort of challenges that he'll be faced with this year.
It all gets started tonight for real with the Raptors and the Atlanta Hawks. Matt, thanks so much for doing this.
Anytime. You know it, Jeff.
See you tonight. That is Matt Devlin. He is the Raptors TV play-by-play voice on Sportsnet. The Raptors and Hawks tonight, 7:30 at the Air Canada Center. As I said, finally the NBA preseason is over. The regular season starts, and safe to say it is a very, very much eagerly anticipated regular season in these parts. Jean-Paul Morosi is the national baseball writer for Fox Sports. He is in Kansas City for the deciding game, Game 7 of the World Series tonight. He's going to join us as we return our focus to baseball. And then this is going to be a real treat. At 11:15, James Johnson, the aforementioned James Johnson of the Toronto Raptors, will join us. Little baseball, little hoops. Right up to Hockey Central at noon. This is the Jeff Blair Show, and this is Sportsnet 590, The Fan.